Grab a chip and a chair. It's time for the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. 92.5 FM, brought to you by the Best Bet Poker Rooms at Jacksonville and Orange Park. Now, the Best Bet Poker Show pals.
Happy Hump Day! Woo-hoo!
Yeah!
You gotta take
Hump
over.
Day.
One more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Welcome to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with, I would say, Jesse the Boss, but somehow he's like stuck in his car.
He's not here.
Forgot the password. He's like, but he'll be coming in hot here in just a minute. And Dustin the Great, and of course, Country in the booth. That's right. We don't have anybody to give us our yeah without the boss here.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
I'm not going to lie. I feel like we should just like, it should just be silence. Woohoo. And then just
a moment of silence.
A moment of silence.
For the boss.
For the boss. Exactly. Well, we got a great show for you guys tonight. In fact, as we were coming in, speaking of great shows, Dustin and I decided we were going to grab some wings over at Island Wing Company. And guess who we ran into? Somebody has to guess. Like, I'm the only one here. So, Dustin, you have to guess.
I already know the answer, so I feel bad guessing.
Country, guess who we ran into?
I have no idea.
We ran into Frank and the crew. They were doing their show live from there. And I will tell you, best wings in town.
Yeah, hands down.
Hands down. Yeah, I think their wings are fantastic. They're baked, not fried. They're crispy and delicious. And I feel like we go there pretty much almost every Wednesday, either before the show or after the show.
So sponsor us.
So can you please sponsor us?
Yeah, so can we have some money, please?
Right. But no, their wings are really fantastic. So it's kind of fun being in the studio having come from Island Wings and just seeing the show right before us. So as we were sitting there chatting about all the new things in poker and all these incredible ceiling-breaking things that have happened, it's really all about tournament poker right now. We go through these different phases where everything's about cash play. Everything's about tournament play. Sometimes there's a nice combination of both. But right now, literally everywhere in the country, tournament play is exploding.
It's so sick right now.
It is sick. So Seminole Hard Rock just had a WPT event.
That's right.
And they crushed every like record that the World Poker Tour has ever had, has ever attempted to do. And we are coming out of the tailspin of a pandemic. So my question is, or my thought process is, right, like, why is that happening now? Are they busy before that? I mean, I know Best Bet is busy all the time, right? It's an indoor place. It's safe. It's a great place for entertainment. People can get out. You can play poker. You can do what you need to do. But, you know, in terms of thinking about places like down south, there's also a lot of additional stuff to do in the Miami, Fort Lauderdale area that we don't facilitate here in Jacksonville. So I wonder, like, is their poker room busy all the time? Or are they just putting up these big numbers because it's strictly based on a tournament series that was scheduled during this time?
Yeah, I agree. I was down there for the first weekend, the first few opening events, and Allie and I talked about it. It was just absolutely insane. They put up record-breaking numbers. They had the biggest prize pool for a non-main, non-high roller event for a $600 entry. And that's not the only property that I've heard about doing this kind of stuff. Like, every property that I've heard of in the past 3 months that have run a series has just been crushing it.
I mean, it's insane. So their main event, they had over, what was it, like 2,700 players or something for their main event. And they generated, 2,482 total entries, generating a prize pool of just shy of $8 million. First place was $1.26 million.
Yeah, and for those of you guys that are keeping track, it was a $2 million guarantee. So they almost quadrupled the guarantee.
First place was more than half of what
almost the guarantee.
Guarantees
are turning into first place money. The whole prize pool guarantees are turning into first place money.
Now that might be kind of fun. Instead of having like a tournament guarantee, have a first place guarantee. They did that at the series, right?
I think that's so sick.
Yeah, like that was the millionaire maker, right? Where they said anybody who makes the final table is guaranteed to make a million. I'm not talking about the main event, but I'm talking about there was another event. I feel like it was called the Millionaire Maker or something like that. But
I think it's a great idea, a great way to draw recreational players into the field, because recreational players, if you don't play a ton of tournaments, you have a hard – the number one question they always ask is, what's first place going to be?
Of course.
So if you can guarantee first place, they might not understand what the guaranteed prize pool entails or how much of that prize pool goes to first place. But if you could guarantee a first place prize – I think that would be huge for drawing new players into the field.
It would be kind of fun. I feel like it would be really hard to do that, right?
Of course.
It would be very difficult to do that, but it would
apparently
be
not.
I mean, yeah, well, yeah, and here we are.
Right.
Right. So they've played down to the final six down at the Hard Rock, WPT, and their Deep Stacks event, they were going to have their final six that will come back, play at the Poker Go studio, and that will happen in, I believe, May. I'm going to double check here and see exactly when that is happening. But they also have the other two tournaments that didn't finish out in 2020 due to the pandemic, and that's the Borgata and the LA Poker Classic. Both of these are coming back. They're set for, let's see, yes, May 18th is when you will see them. So May 18th at the Poker Go Studios, which is there at Aria in Las Vegas. And so anybody who traveled down here is now going to need to travel to Vegas to continue to play out the final table there for the final six. So we're starting to get back into a rhythm of seeing the way that poker has been, the way it has evolved, and moving forward. And tournament poker is really exploding. So if you haven't shifted your game or dabbled in tournament poker and you're kind of a cash player, or maybe you've never even stepped out, let me tell you something. If you can find a $50 tournament or a $200 tournament, a $100 tournament, this is a great way to get your feet wet with a small amount of money to be able to amass piles of cash. And I mean piles, right? Because it was a $600 buy-in and first place was like $1 million or something crazy.
I don't remember what first place was in that one. It was something ridiculous. I think it was like $300K or $400K.
Oh, it was $1 million was in the prize pool. Over $1 million in the prize pool.
Over $2 million in
the
prize
pool. Over $2 million in the prize pool.
Or 600,
yeah. I mean, it's just, it's totally crazy. So also the high roller event, they had the 25K high roller event. There was a guy, Chad Evelslade, who wins the $2,500 event after he was playing four-handed. He triple barrels with a busted straight draw with nine high, leaving himself with one single chip. Being all in the next hand, four-handed, he gets called by a guy who has two pair. He goes, one chip, he's all in for less, wins the pot, comes back, and wins the entire event.
That's incredible.
Isn't that incredible?
That's the dream.
It's the dream, especially in like, talk about saving it for your one time. You should definitely do it in the 25K high roller event.
Of course.
Because that's definitely where you want that one time to happen.
That's incredible. What's his backstory? What is he? Is he just a professional high roller circuit guy? Or
I would have to go back and look. I really don't. I really don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not sure who he is, but I just thought that that was kind of a fun story to tell. That
yeah.
He triple barrels four-handed, right, leaving himself with one chip. And here's the other thing. Like, I wonder, did he cognitively say, I'm going to leave myself with one chip? Or was he just betting based on, I mean, obviously he knew he was going to have chips left. But
right,
did he feel like it was stronger to bet the way that he did than versus going all in?
Right.
Like, it made a stronger impact? Or was he like, I need to leave myself with one chip just in case I can win the tournament?
That's a pretty funny way to think about it.
Yeah. Like, was that part of his thought process?
I feel like that happens more often than not with super deep runs that usually end up in first place. Like, a good example is Greg Mercer in, like, the 2012
mm-hmm.
main.
Yeah.
I think he had, like, three big blinds or two big blinds at one point.
Mm-hmm.
But it was early, way earlier on in the tournament besides four-handed, and he came back and won the thing.
Yeah,
when you're going to win, you're just going to win. It's already decided. The minute you sit down, it's already decided in a tournament.
Speaking of things being decided, so I came across this situation where a poker player correctly predicts the entire board. The entire board.
This is crazy.
Running out for an all-in pot. So they get all the chips in. It's ace-jack versus jack. It's on a live stream table. One of the guys in the hand calls the board, and he's like, it's going to come 8, 9, 10, rainbow. And
Boom.
It does.
Boom.
Bam. 8, 9, 10, rainbow. Everybody kind of, people start standing up. They're like, oh, okay. Like, you know, people call the flop. They get one card, two card. That's fine. Like, whatever. He calls it. And then they say, all right, what's going to come next? He says, four of spades on the turn. Four of spades to come. It's coming. Four of spades. Bink. Four of spades. A couple more people stand up. They all start screaming. And then they all look at him and say, well, what's the river card going to be? Like, you just called four cards. Get the fifth one, right? He says, deuce of hearts. No waiting. Bink. Deuce of hearts on the river. The table erupts. Everybody stands up. Nobody can even believe what happened. And I feel like the poor guy who busts out the turn is like, I get no acknowledgement for anything because the board just ran out and that is now the story.
Right.
But what are the odds of that happening, Dustin?
Well, you and I talked about it briefly, and I think on the turn, I think it's 1 out of 29. I think on the river, it's 1 out of 22. But to do it all, or I'm sorry, 1 out of 27 on the river. But to do it all consecutively, it's got to be in the hundreds of millions.
We're going to have to get Jimmy Lyons back
maybe
on the show.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to get, I feel like I'm going to send this to him and ask him what the odds of this are. And maybe he'll join us next week and talk about it.
1-800 Jimmy Lyons.
Yeah. Literally, we need phone Jimmy Lyons to, I should see if I can get him on the phone right now.
Yeah. That's pretty
great.
Like,
I need you to explain this to us. Math 101, please.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's a lot of fun. Things are happening. So, tournament play is exploding. People are having a good time. Everybody's back out. They're kind of in there. They're getting their feet wet again. And we got a $50 tournament voucher to give to you guys. And I know there is the Trifecta Series coming up this weekend, which is 3 events, 2 single-day events, and 1 multi-day event. And we'll talk more about that when we come back. So stick around. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
It's the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Ally McDeal here with Dustin the Great and Country helping us out in the booth. All right, so we've been talking a little bit about things that are happening in poker, things that are really exploding, and the look of that right now is tournament poker. The trend is tournaments, tournaments, tournaments. And it's funny because tournaments, you have a lot of variance, typically speaking, right? Because you buy in, and if you don't cash, like, you're done. That's it, right? But right now, I think because the prize pools are so big and they're generating so much value for such a small buy-in, maybe that's what the craze is. And I don't know if that's going to level out or what that's going to look like. And a lot of these tournaments, people are playing very deep, right? Like as we talk about, we were talking about the World Poker Tour that just wrapped up an event. They're coming back six-handed, and I think the guy who's the chip leader has 80 big blinds. That's not super deep at a final table, but to think about what in terms of what that means in the early stages of the tournament, like, Dustin, do you know what the structure was for some of those events? Like, how many big blinds do we start with?
I'm not sure how many. I know they started with 40K starting stacks, and okay. I'm assuming it was an incredibly generous. It was a $3,500 main. I can only assume it was 40-minute
so
levels at least.
So like 1,000 bigs or something.
Yeah, so yeah, probably more.
So at least 1,000 bigs. So we're talking
probably
about
50, 100 with 40K starting stacks.
Yeah, so which is great. So like 4,000 big blinds, right? So when we've talked about this in the last couple weeks, and as we've talked about the type of players, especially when you're playing like a loose aggressive player, we talked about last week how, you know, if you're how this huge pot was like 16 or 18K pot amassed in a 1-2 game, which is just off the Richter scale, makes no sense. Tournament poker is kind of like that in the early stages of the game. And what that allows you to do is you have momentum and ability to maneuver your chips, use them like soldiers, as we talk about, send them out and have them collect and gather and bring back more men or more chips, right? So when this is a situation and you have these chips or you're playing super deep, one of the typical types of play that people either don't utilize enough or are unclear how to execute is the down bet. Now, remember, again, like this is not something that you would probably want to use if you were playing super short because I feel like you'd just be bleeding chips. So this is a type of play that you would use more often than not when you're playing pretty deep poker. So, Dustin, I know that you like to down bet. I know this is something that's big in your repertoire. So I will tell everybody kind of what that looks like. It effectively just means, you know, we talk about when bet sizing is very important when you're playing, right? And so the amount, proportionately speaking, of what you bet in proportion to your stack size and in proportion to what is in the pot in totality, that's what you... This is what we're looking to bet, like how much we want to bet, right? Percentage base and amount. So down betting would look like something completely less than what a normal bet size would be. A normal bet size being about half to three quarters of the pot, right? So down betting would look like if you were betting something like, you know, 1/8 of the pot. Some ridiculously small bet that almost makes no sense whatsoever, right? So that's a down bet. So Dustin, talk about a little bit about how you like to use down betting, where you use it, and where you find it to be the most successful.
So it's pretty popular in tournaments. It's starting to become pretty popular. It has been popular at the higher stakes in cash games. You're starting to see it more at the lower stakes in cash games. That doesn't always mean that people are applying it correctly. The best spots to use down bets are in on the flops, right? So we're starting to see them like 30% pot flop bets.
Okay.
And effectively what the down betting does is it gives your opponent a really good price to continue with their entire range while simultaneously applying pressure to people that overfold. So just as a general dynamic across the board in poker in general, players overfold to any aggression. It doesn't matter. You made a comment during the break about a player betting $5 into 500 and people folding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people just sometimes they just fold. So
they're just like, why would I put any money in? I have nothing. Yeah.
So the down bet accomplishes a lot of things on the flop. It allows you to continue with a very merged range, which means all of your hands, right? A very wide range.
Very broad range.
Yeah. So like you can have backdoor equity. You can kind of have the nuts. If you're balanced, you can have nothing. You can have all kinds of hands, and it makes sense for you to bet. So you bet a small amount. You risk the least. Players overfold. And the players that continue, it also gives them a very good price to continue with their entire range, which is something that we want players to do. We always want them to call with worse. And even if they call with better, we can just reevaluate on the turn.
Right.
So we keep them in with all of their bad hands.
So if we're keeping them in with all of their bad hands, talk about like when is this a good spot to implement it? Like if you're looking at if you're trying to run a bluff, when you're drawing, when you really have the best hand, because sometimes there's situations where down betting in a spot where you have a really big draw, I feel like is sometimes a very productive thing to do. Because you want to get people in, you want people drawing as opposed to, and you want to get there inexpensively, right? Like as cheap as possible. So if you're firing a small bet into a pot when you have a large drawing hand and you get people to call and you spike your draw on the turn, your hand is very easily disguised, whether you check or if you bet. Nobody's typically putting you on like that you just made your flush or that you just made your straight or that you made whatever particular drawing hand you might be on.
Sure. I think the answer to your question of when is a good time to use it, it's all of the above scenarios. I think that you can make a case for using the down bet in all of the above scenarios. You can make a case for using the down bet when you have a draw. You can make a case for making the down bet when you have the nuts. And you can make a case for having a down bet when you're in the middle of your range, when you flop like second pair or when you have an under pair to the board. And you can also make a case for having it with none of the above, which is why it's such a great play. And in fact, to be balanced, you should do it at some frequency with all of the above hands.
Yes. And then that's the same thing, right? Like if you raise every time you have aces or if you do the exact same thing with the exact same hand all the time, then you create and develop a pattern. And so to free yourself from that and break those chains, you want to make sure that you use it in each part of your range. So that's a good tip. Welcome, boss man. Decided to walk in. Thank you for gracing us with your pleasure, with your presence.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Glad I could make it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
We were seriously lacking in the yes in the beginning of the show.
The intro wasn't the same.
I really wasn't.
So I'm sorry. I was finishing up a little charity golf tournament for the River Gardens.
Oh, that's nice.
Hashtag
nice.
For the people.
Was
hashtag
there some gambling the going on?
Perhaps.
Perhaps, maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah. I did win, Mike Berry and I each won the same proximity prize on different holes.
That's interesting.
You'll never guess in a million years which prize we won or for what.
It had to have been like a best bet swag.
A couple's massage.
No, not what we won. Not what we won, but why we won it. Right there, you have longest putt, longest drive, closest to the pin. Straightest drive.
But it's definitely not the straightest drive. No chance.
Both of them. Straightest drive.
Wow, unbelievable. I would have lost my house on that bet.
Right, yeah. I've seen Mike's drive. I can't believe.
The farm is gone.
Mine was actually like 2 feet off center, and I thought, well, that's not going to hold up. I'll write my name down anyway, but it held up.
Uh-huh.
And then Mike Berry, who hits the ball very, very far, we didn't even know it was a straightest drive hole. He outdrove the line that was put on the hole.
Wow,
so we had to like take a picture and say, look, his ball is still online, even though the line stopped 50 feet back.
Of course.
And it was dead center. It was
hysterical.
Dead center. It was pretty funny.
He's a powerhouse.
He's a powerhouse. So we each won the straightest drive, oddly enough. But it was a great time, good cause, River Gardens, facility. So made some money, played some golf.
Congratulations.
You made some money, so now you padded your bankroll. You ready to jump into some of that tournament play?
Ready.
Ready.
Ready for some action. I will say this about down betting. One little trick for down betting that you can use is if you're in position on the turn, it's checked to you, and maybe you're not really sure what's out there. You know, you can represent, you can attempt to represent what's out there on the board with a small down bet. Mm-hmm. If you just get mild resistance and nothing comes on the river, a normal standard bet is probably going to take the pot, right? If people are like just calling because whatever, it's a down bet and they have a draw to something, whatever, I'll just put in a, you know, this little bet because I got outs, and then, you know, nothing changes or whatever, and it's checked to you again, you make a standard bet and you pick up the pot.
All right, so we've talked about and covered down betting in terms of actually implementing down betting when you're executing it. So let's talk about when you're defending against the down bet, because that's a whole other side of the equation. Because if you think about what we just talked about, right, down betting and how it's such a big piece, and knowing that when you're down betting, you're getting people to call with the worst hands and people are overfolding. So if you're on the receiving end of somebody who's down betting pretty frequently, right, maybe their frequency is high, maybe that's part of a trick in their repertoire. How do you adjust for that on the defending side?
I mean, again, if you're in position, I think you would just make a standard size raise.
And by standard, you mean in proportion to the actual down bet or in proportion to what a regular bet would have been?
I would say more proportionately towards the size of the pot than the size of the raise.
Right. Okay.
I think that's a big mistake that players make just in general across the board. And there's actually a hand of the week that's coming out soon where this is it's going to be on our YouTube channel, but it's in full effect. A player bets 100 into like 800 and a player raises him 3x the 100, which gives him an incredible, incredible pot odds.
Right.
I think you have to be very mindful of what is actually in the pot when you raise. And so say there's 100 in the pot, your opponent down bets to 30, you should be looking to check raise or raise much larger than 3x 30, right? Because there's already 100 in the pot.
Right. So when you're defending, when you're defending the down bet, you want to almost just remove it entirely and pretend as if it's non-existent. Like,
right. Just
and,
think
and
if,
even
if
on
the
smaller
guy,
terms, like if you think about like $100 pot and somebody bets like five, just in terms of like a small scale, somebody bets five, you don't want to raise and be like, oh, I'm going to make it 15 because
really
now it costs
example.
Them 10 to draw to, you know, and they get 100 and they got 120 coming back. It's $10 to win 120. So the odds there, I mean, I feel like it's a little bit easier to understand it from a smaller standpoint, but that's where you have to be careful. So if somebody down bets $5 into a $100 pot, when you're raising, you want to think about like that bet right there should have been roughly like $50. So I want to raise in proportion to what that looks like. So I'm going to actually make it like 55 or I'm going to make it 75.
That's a really good
or
point.
Or whatever that looks like, right?
Agreed 100%.
So Jesse, do you implement the down betting on the reg?
Sometimes. Not. I wouldn't say I do it on the reg. It's kind of a weird sort of obscure play for me. I do use it, as I said, in certain cases on the turn. If I don't really necessarily – I want to bet something. I don't really want to bet a lot. I kind of get a feel of where the players are and – you know, you can make that small bet and see, you know, get a live read on how they put their chips in or what they're doing or, you know, get a little bit more information out of them by making a small bet and making them do some sort of action by putting chips into the pots. Then you can think, well, look, I mean, they're all just on draws. Nothing gets there, I'll bet, or not, you know.
Mm. Dustin, you mentioned talking about down betting and how it's more effective on the flop. Do you ever down bet on other streets, or like what's your frequency of doing that? I feel like that's not something I would do.
I see people really down bet
on the river, and it doesn't make any sense to me. That's not a play that I would ever implement unless I like literally am sitting on the nuts and hope that I can extract a tiny amount of money. But that down bet only comes from if I'm sitting on the nuts and I know the guy's going to fold to effectively any bet other than something ridiculous.
Right. You're sitting there, you got quads or something, and there's nothing anybody else can have on the board, and it's checked to you. Sometimes it's kind of funny to do a down bet and watch people agonize over the fact that
I got
to
call this.
I have to call because it's only
$25.
But that's a small piece of the equation, right? So, like, if that's not the exact situation, would you ever down bet on the river and or the turn, because obviously the down bet's more effective on the flop because you have more streets to come. So you have more time, ample time to adjust. There's more time for your hand to improve, and there's more opportunity for your opponent's hand to either A, improve, or just be destroyed, right? So as you get further in the hand, what do you do with that?
Well, I won't say usually, in heads up pots where I have position, I tend to down bet almost 100% of flops. Only because
when you're in position,
I'm in position in heads up pots. Mm-hmm. Multi-way is obviously a little different, and nobody has a perfect multi-way strategy because it's just way too complex. But mm-hmm. in heads up pots in position, I tend to use down bet at a way higher frequency as the raiser.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, I use them at a frequency on the river. On the turn, I think the turn and the river, for the most part, you should start polarizing your ranges, which what that means is you should start forming your range into just value hands and bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
You should effectively be getting rid of the middle of your range. You don't want to be in the middle of your range on turns and rivers. On the flop, it's fine. So the down bet works better when you are in the mergey kind of middle. You have a wide range. The down bet works a lot better. So the flop, I use it a lot. The turn, I tend to polarize, and I either go big or check. And the good thing about that is it kind of makes up for the down bet. So say you do have the nuts right on the flop.
Mm-hmm.
So you bet 30% pot, and then you bet 110% pot on turn. Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes
you
up for that
up
value
for that
where you
betting.
Might have left, mm-hmm. lost by betting two-thirds pot or something mm-hmm. like that. So anyway, so I tend to polarize on turns. And then rivers, I kind of evaluate, and it's kind of like Jesse said, and like you said also, if we have a really strong hand, we don't think we're ever going to get value from worse. It's a good spot to bet really small. On rivers, I kind of tend to polarize a little bit also.
Mm.
But in those particular spots where I just don't think I could get ever called by worse, and you get to name your own price. And like Jesse said, you can kind of name your own price with your bluffs too on rivers, and you can use the down bet. If you think they're 100% on a stone draw and everything misses, you get to name your own bluff price.
Right.
That's a good spot to down bet also. If there's 200 in the middle and you know that everything missed and you think, you know, you bet huge on the turn, everything missed, and you get there on the river, there's 200 in the middle, you might be able to bet 60 and get a fold.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to bet 200 there just to get the fold. You could just bet 50 because they're folding for 50 for 200.
Yeah, their fold equity is.
They might fold for 25. You know,
right,
they have nothing.
Yeah.
Well, I know that we have a good down betting hand example specifically that Dustin's going to run us through. We can come back from the break. Also, a $50 tournament voucher that we're giving away. I know there's a live stream tonight, and there's some giveaways on the live stream. So if you guys want to tune into that, you can go to Best Bet Live. You can follow them on Facebook. You can follow them on Twitch. You can follow them on YouTube. You can pretty much watch it anywhere, anyway. If you just go under your search bar and plug in Best Bet Live, it's going to take you to all of them. You can see what we're doing here in the show, and you can follow the game that's happening tonight. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more of the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Ally McDeal here with Jesse the Boss.
In the
Dustin
house.
Dustin the Great. And Country, the boss man, decided to join us, grace us with his presence, as we've been talking about down betting. The explosion of tournament poker and how down betting can really help your game. And it's something that people don't use quite enough. We were talking about, you know, best place to utilize the down bet is obviously on the flop, where you have more wiggle room and a larger area to actually, or more control of the game, multiple streets to come. So it's going to be more effective there. And down betting on the river is really basically just going to be used when you have the nuts and you're hoping to get a little bit of value and pray that the person has maybe a small margin of non-fold equity and hopefully that they pay you off. So, Dustin, I know you said you had a hand that you want to pull apart that gives a prime example of down betting, how to use it and how it's effective.
So, yeah, in this hand was from a 2-5 game. And in this hand, we did go multi-way preflop, which in these spots, I'm not a big fan of using the down bet multi-way just because you've already reduced your share of the equity in the pot. How much equity you have in the pot is already greatly reduced the more players enter the pot. So in that case, you don't want to down bet too often. And we were also out of position, but this was a good spot to use a down bet and it worked out in our favor. So we're playing 2-5 no limit. And we look down, we have pocket queens under the gun. We have the queen of diamonds. We have the queen of clubs.
Okay.
So we make it 25, and we end up going five ways to the flop. So we get called by a middle position guy, two late position guys, and I think a blind cost.
You're like effectively, you're out of position.
Right, and we started the hand with 100 big blinds. So we started with 500. We have the second worst position. I think one of the blinds called. So we go five ways to the flop. There's 130 in the middle. And the flop comes queen, seven, tray, two spades. So the queen of spades, the seven of spades, and the three of diamonds. So we flop top set.
So you flop a top set with no flush redraw.
With no flush redraw. We flop top set. We obviously don't have the queen of spades. And there's about 130 in the middle. So we lead for $40, right?
Ooh,
so
down betting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we down bet. We lead for a third. We opened to 25, and we lead for 40.
I'll be honest with you, I do not like this right now. It's giving me anxiety.
Sure. Sure. And
I like that it's giving you anxiety. Yeah. I think that's funny.
When you down bet, you have to be prepared for the raise because a lot of players, and it's easy in this hand that we're talking about because we flop the effective
nuts.
We flop the effective nuts with two cards to come. But you have to be prepared for the raise because a lot of unstudied players aren't going to view the down bet as a strategical maneuver. They're going to view it as weakness.
Correct.
So you're going to get raised a ton.
Uh-huh.
So you have to be prepared and you have to have a plan to move forward when you get raised. This is why I said I prefer to use it heads up in position because then it doesn't matter. You can just play the hand. Right. It's a lot easier. But
there's a lot of unknown variables when you start adding the additional players, especially because like if you 100%. Bet and then the first person raises and then all of a sudden it comes back to you and right. you're facing a three bet, like now you're just in a, you have the nuts right now, but you don't have any spade blockers. Like it's a
in this case,
like,
you hope to get raised.
Builds.
In this spot, we hope to get raised.
You hope to get raised,
so this is why it was so good. The reason I agree with you why it would give you anxiety, but we're just confident in the fact that we have two cards to come. Mm-hmm. Even if a spade comes on the turn,
sure.
still super happy to see a river. Doesn't matter. We'll get all the money.
I will say that I like the down bet in this spot. It does look either like a huge hand or somebody who's just forced to make a C bet because they raised, so they missed. So that they got two over cards.
100%.
This is effectively like when I say it gives me anxiety, it's effectively like, let me paint the picture for people that don't understand what I'm talking about when I say that. In terms of, let's just say you're on the button. Say you're in the big blind. We'll put ourselves out of position. Doesn't matter. You're in the big blind and you pick up two black aces and it comes around to you and four people have gone all in. And you have all about the same amount. Everybody starts to hand with 1,000 and everybody in front of you, four people in front of you go all in. That like builds my anxiety because you're not ever folding.
It's
not what you want to see happen.
You're drawing to about half the equity.
Yeah, you're like, this is not the way I want to play.
I think it's something like 60% with aces preflop or something.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's 60%.
So like we said, a lot of players will attack the down bet because they think it's a sign of weakness, which was kind of what I was hoping for. So we bet 40 into 125 or 130. So we bet exactly 33% pot.
Mm-hmm.
And the next guy to act spazzes out and he makes it 140, which is exactly what we want.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So in this spot, we can't be too concerned with turns and rivers. You know, we're just going to play each spot as it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the field folds. We Hollywood and then we put in the rest of the chips. He goes into the tank. And he calls, and he turns over pocket kings of all hands.
Wow.
Turn comes spade. River comes spade. Oh. He has no spade.
Oh! Whoa.
No
nice.
Spade.
Hey, dodge one. And, dodging.
Yeah. Actually, he waited to turn over his hand. It comes spade, and I go, oh, gross.
Like,
and the river comes spade.
So gross.
I table my hand, and I say, nice hand. I'm just assuming, like what hand can call you there with no spade?
Yeah.
So it comes spade, spade. I just turn over my hand. I say, nice hand. I show top set. Nice hand. And then he goes, oh, no, you win. No spade. And he shows me pocket kings.
Wow.
Two red kings.
Like, puts him in the muck.
I will say it's kind of a cooler spot for him because, you know, although I don't like the no three bet on his part pre-flop, on the flop, I do like his raise to 140.
Of course. Yeah, you know, especially I think that gross flop.
On that flop with two red kings, I think that's a good raise. And then if you come back over the top, now is it queens or aces?
Sure. He told me he thought I had ace queen with the ace of spades. Like I had an ace queen with the blocker.
Right. Well, that's because that's the only hand.
Sense.
I mean, if he narrows down your range, that's the only thing he can beat, right? You raised pre-flop and come out with the bet, and then he raised you three bet.
Mm-hmm.
So you should either have aces there or queens, or the ace queen with the ace of spades. But
sure. Or ace X of spades, maybe.
Yeah, I was like, you could have a lot of hands.
Well, yeah, you could have ace king of spades, right? He doesn't have the king of spades.
You could have sevens. You could have ace whatever of spades, right?
But he's not a favorite over ace king of spades either. Well, yeah, yes, he's a favorite. But
he is a favorite.
He is a favorite over ace king of spades. But is he a favorite over aces, queens, ace king of spades, and the ace queen?
I mean,
and pocket sevens.
Yeah, pocket sevens are.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose pocket sevens have to be in the conversation, but.
I would play sevens the same way, which is a reason I played queens that way. I would play sevens.
I mean,
he's
polarizing your range a lot, speaking of polarizing ranges. I mean, to call with kings, like, I feel like, yeah, he's basically telling you, and this is one of those things where you're like, okay, we talk about what is a range of hands that the person can have in that situation. And because it just went raise, you know, you opened, or not you, but the guy opens preflop from under the gun, and it just gets called around, like, that's. And that range can be pretty big, depending on the player, right?
Sure, right.
And so now we get to the flop, and all the money goes in. There's not a lot of information left to be had. You fire out, this guy goes all in. There's not a whole ton of information. Yeah. So for him to narrow it down to be like you have the ace queen with the ace of spades, I feel like is pretty small.
That's just because that is the hand that he can beat, that he can put you on, and it's tough fold kings right there. So,
right, you play the hand super tricky, like you're like, I'm gonna spring the trap with kings,
yeah,
and then you spring the trap and you get the trap like re-sprung on you, and you're like, I made it this far, I guess I have to call with kings.
Do
in
you
this
fold
spot.
With kings if you don't have the king of spades?
We never get to that spot with kings.
We're never putting that much money in ever.
Well, it's not just that, but like I would 3-bet kings almost 100%
of the
time. Yeah,
hand never plays out that way with me with two kings, especially. Right.
You still go broke because the guy calls with queens and spikes a queen.
Yeah, we still go broke. Probably with 100 big blinds, I'm fine going broke with kings there.
Yeah, and that's okay. But I agree.
For 100 big blinds, yes.
If we have 500
big blinds, no.
If we have 1,000 big blinds, I don't know if I go broke with kings there.
I don't go broke with kings there, not without the king of spades in my hand.
Right.
Not happening.
But. We never get to that spot.
I overfold, Dustin, as we talked.
That's true. Yeah, that's why I'm fine getting 100 big blinds in with kings.
Yeah, 100 big blinds is fine, but 1,000, probably not. Right.
Well, different conversation. But also, I would just 3-bet kings preflop.
Well, I would definitely just 3-bet the kings preflop. But it is an interesting spot to end up with two kings there. And like you said, he springs the trap, and now all of a sudden it comes back on him, and now he puts himself in a spot where, well, I did everything I wanted to happen here.
Right.
Everything happened
like
just as it's supposed to, but now all of a sudden I don't feel so good about it.
Yeah. But also by the time it all comes back around to him, even though I don't think he was the type of player to work through this in his brain, he was actually not getting the worst price with two kings. By the time he raised and by the time I 4-bet, it was like his last 350 to win 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he really wasn't getting the worst. It wasn't after all was said and done, if we just kind of take it to a micro zoomed in right there on that flop decision.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the worst decision.
No.
Just stick it in with kings.
Yeah, no,
I don't think so. You're right.
It's not the worst. All right. Well, we were talking about the trifecta series is coming up as tournament poker has just been absolutely exploding, crushing records all over the place. I know we have the Car Player Poker Tour scheduled to come here. I do believe World Poker Tour is probably coming back in the fall. I don't know if that has been finalized.
Strong possibility of World Poker Tour coming back in August.
So that's two big tournament series that are happening. Is there a third one or just those two currently?
Just those two that we have currently. Obviously, Card Player is out and publicized, and the Trifecta Series is this weekend. There is a strong possibility for the WPT to be back in Jacksonville in August. And that's as far as we're looking.
I'm excited. We're trying to figure out if tournament poker is going to continue to hold the way that it has erupted and just came out in full force, right? People are starting to open back up, and tournament poker has been a big thing.
Yeah.
Will it continue to have this, like, is there a ceiling? Is it going to stay that way, right? You know, there's these trends that have happened in poker over the years, whether it's been limit poker to no limit poker, tournament play, all these different things, and they sit, climb, and then they kind of plateau, and then they either dip off a little bit or they continue to rise. Same thing happened with internet poker, right? So I'll be curious to know if we see tournament poker becoming the new, and it's always been really big, but are people going to shift and go from playing cash to really playing more tournaments just because the prize pools are so astronomical that you can invest a small amount to win more than you could ever win investing that $200 playing in any other form of a cash game. Or, I mean, not I just, ever, but
I just think
that
cash games and tournaments are all really good right now. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's a lot of people that want to play poker in general, not just tournaments. Although tournaments are obviously seeing a very high number of entries. I think it's just all over the board.
I'm looking forward to the draft happening. As soon as we get Trevor Lawrence here, maybe we'll get him in the poker room, find out if that boy can play some poker.
Yeah, so play
I bet
some
he
cards.
Played some cards through college. What do you think? I bet it happened. I think he can hang with us. I think he could do it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we got that $50 tournament voucher to give away. We'll talk all things promotions and put a wrap on the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Best Bet Poker Show on 1010XL. And 92.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Best Bet Poker Show. Allie McDeal here with Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Gray, to wrapping up the program. All right, as promised, we have that $50 tournament voucher for you. Speaking of all these tournaments, we got to give you guys a way to get in a little bit cheaper. The Trifecta Series is coming up here this weekend, so we're going to give away that $50 tournament voucher right now. 641-1010 is the phone number. 641-1010. We will take the third caller in honor of the Trifecta Series. So, we talk about the Trifecta Series. Boss Man, tell us about what to expect. I know it's this weekend, three tournaments. Two of them are single days and one is a multi-day, yes?
That's correct. Friday is the starter. It starts at noon. That's a $1,000 buy-in. Single-day tournament. You start with 20,000 in chips. This is a cool event because it's one day, $1,000 buy-in. I expect a big field, so there'll be a large prize pool. Win it in one day. The main event is May 1st, Kentucky Derby Day, starts at noon. It's a $2,000 buy-in, 25K starting chips, and this is a two-day event. We will play down to the money on day one. Everybody that comes back day two is in the money. That's 12.5% of the field. Come back day two, we'll finish it out, and we will live stream that final table on our Best Bet Live channels. And then Sunday at 1 p.m. Starts the closer. That's a $500 buy-in event, 20,000 starting chips. I expect all these to get very big fields. So if you want to play a tournament with a large prize pool, just one-day tournaments and a short two-day tournament, this is your weekend. I think we still have a couple satellites.
Friday night, we have one into the 2K. We have a mega tomorrow.
Today, the 28th, yeah. So tomorrow night, tomorrow night and the 30th, there are satellites into the Trifecta main event.
So if you're a tournament player,
and one into the
satellite
starter.
Tonight, but yeah. Not only is there a satellite, but if you're a cash player, it's $1,200 every 60 minutes in Jacksonville and Orange Park until midnight tonight.
Wow.
So those are big high hands.
How can you not be in the poker room playing poker right
now? How can you not be in the poker room? Tomorrow
I'm
is $500 every 30 minutes throughout the entire day. So listen. People ask this question all the time. They're like, well, I want to watch this sport, or I want to see the UFC fight, or I want to see the, you know, la, 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 whatever's happening. You guys have, you know, there's over 150 TVs in the poker room. You can watch anything you
want.
You
watch everything,
right?
Yeah.
You watch anything and everything. You want to watch the draft? Play some poker while you're watching the draft.
Yeah,
you want to watch the Kentucky Derby? Come place your bet. You can place your wager on any of the Derby horses at either property. You can go to Orange Park. You can come to Jacksonville. You can watch the race happen there live on the big screen. There's always a party. It's tons of fun. The Greyhounds might not be racing. However, the Kentucky Derby is going on, and you can put all your simulcast wagers right there. So that's pretty spectacular. It's a lot of fun. There's sushi, fresh sushi in both card rooms. Sushi is spectacular. It's really delicious. If you're not super into poker yet, but you're still trying to figure out a way to get out and get some entertainment, don't forget there's all those Las Vegas-style card games, those casino-style games. Pai Gal, three-card poker, two-card poker, one-card poker, ultimate Texas Hold'em, high-card flush, and I'm missing one.
Three-card poker.
Okay, and three-card poker. I think I said that one. But Pai there Gal. Are seven games in
DJ
totality.
Wild. DJ Wild.
Wild. That's the one.
Which
DJ
is a
Wild.
Lot of fun, by the way, DJ
They're
Wild.
They're so much fun. And remember, these games are, you know, they're simulated to mimic a fast-paced game, something similar to blackjack. While we don't have blackjack, it's similar to that type of a game. It is fast. It's a $5 wager. You can hang out with your girlfriends. You can hang out with your boyfriend. You can hang out with your family. You need to be 18 years or older to play. Remember, the card room, we do require you to wear masks. They are doing temperature checks upon entry. There is still tons and tons of cleaning going on, so it's a nice, safe environment. Lots of space.
Come
Everybody's spaced out. Eight players per table still, I do believe, and six in the pit. So it's definitely a place you want to come and be. You can get all your information at bestbetjacks.com. That's going to do it for us, but don't go anywhere. End of the Night with Rick Ballew is coming up next. For Jesse the Boss, Dustin the Great, and Country, I'm Allie McDeal saying, until next time, we hope to see you at the final table.